Welcome to the I Believe podcast, an Acure Insight production, brought to you by Castle Biosciences. I'm your host, Danae Peterson, a fellow ocular melanoma survivor. Here on the podcast, we'll be sharing information and insights on treatments, research, and living with ocular melanoma.
Castle Biosciences tests are designed to provide clinicians precise and personalized tumor information for the benefit of patient care. If you would like more information about how Castle is transforming the treatment of eye cancer, visit castletestinfo.com.
All right, everyone, welcome to another enlightening episode of our series here at Acure Insight, where our mission is to empower cancer patients through advocacy and information and to shine light on the stories of resilience in the ocular melanoma community. I'm your host, Danae Peterson, and it's been an absolute pleasure to have you joining us live today. And those of you joining the recording, we're so grateful that you're here. And today, I just want to extend a thank you to any of our live listeners, as well as those who follow along on the YouTube channel and our podcast listening platforms. We are so grateful for your support. Don't forget to hit subscribe or to share this with another fellow ocular melanoma patient or caregiver, someone in the community who could benefit from this information or these stories. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest today, and I am so excited to bring Erin's story to light, really, because I had the fortune of meeting her in Miami or Orlando.
Orlando.
I don't actually remember which one. Orlando. We met in Orlando, and we had probably, six patients there, including myself and Melody at the 5K, and Erin was telling me that she had been diagnosed when she was, 23. And it has now been over 20 years since her diagnosis. I think we just did the math and you said about 21 years, which is incredible and so hopeful. And so I'm thrilled to have you join us today, Erin. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's an honor. Thank you.
So Erin, can you just give us a little bit of a background on who you are, where you're from, and let's just start at the beginning of your diagnosis.
Sure. I'm Erin. I grew up, I'm from St. Augustine, been here my whole life, went to the University of Florida. Never had a visual issue. My whole family wore glasses. They're like, oh, eventually you'll need them. Moved to Tampa after college, and within a year or less, I noticed a flashing in my vision. And vision, fortunately, was something we always took pretty seriously. My father was a dean at the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind, and prior to that, the Indiana School for the Deaf and Blind. And he said, go to an eye doctor right away. Well, the optometrist didn't know, and so I went to an ophthalmologist, and she's like, I'm not quite sure. Then they sent me to a specialist, and that's when she said, I'm pretty sure, I think it was actually a Friday the 13th, and she said, I'm pretty sure this is cancer. And I'm like, but I'm 23, and I'm still immortal. And so she wanted me to go to see Dr. Pavin, who was at USF in Tampa and kind of connected to the Moffitt Cancer Research Center. And that's one thing I learned when they say right away, and they actually mean right away, not 2 weeks or a month. It was the following Monday morning. That's the expediency is a red flag. So I saw him on Monday morning, and within a few hours of the fluorescein angiograms, the ultrasound, he said it's cancer or it's cancer that spread, and we have to figure out which one it was. So that was the beginning. I had to call my parents, and my father was in the lobby and deliver the news. I was worried about them. I thought I'd be fine. I had a lot to learn as far as where I was at statistically and exactly what ocular melanoma could mean. And we had to figure out what it was going to mean to me individually. So that was the beginning.
Goodness. So I know it's been a while, but do you remember roughly the size of your diagnosis, the tumor at diagnosis?
So I've tried to look, and I actually called a year or two ago to, I think it was USF, and my files, because my doctor has since retired right during COVID, are so far back. They're in a geographical, other location, I think. I think it was medium. It wasn't large. It didn't need to be enucleated. It was a treatable size when we discovered it. I think it was a couple millimeters. I'm not quite, it's been so long and everything was so fast at the time that I didn't absorb. To me, I just said, okay, so if it's cancer, we do chemo. And if it's cancer that spread, chemo radiation. And he goes, if it spread, you pretty much don't have a chance. I'm like, okay, but I'm young. And just that was more of the thing, is making sure it hadn't metastasized yet. So I think it was medium,
yeah.
I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, medium or small medium, like that would track, mm-hmm. especially what we, you know, with what we know about prognostication with biopsies that we can do now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume 20 years ago, 21 years ago, you probably didn't have a biopsy, mm-hmm. at least not a Castle test at least.
No.
Which is fine. I mean, all of it would kind of be moot information at this point for you this far out in your diagnosis. Yeah. So you mentioned that you had brachytherapy done. Do you want to just kind of briefly describe like what that experience was like for you, and anything that kind of stood out about kind of how you had to deal with brachytherapy? Or
so, it was fine. I guess I should say it wasn't a negative experience for all it could be. I went in and they attached for me, my tumor I think was in the back of my eye, so they unplugged, they detached it from one of the muscles, and then they sewed the plaque on the back. And I think I was in the hospital for 5 or 6 days. I had to stay there. The staff was amazing. I was very fortunate. I had so many people come visit me that I barely had time to kind of even think about what was going on. Family, tons of friends, so it almost became like a not a little party, but I mean, we'd have pizza in my room and people would hang out as long as they were allowed. If they were, adults, which most of them were. And it was, it was different. Having life go on outside of the walls of the hospital. I think I had a cell phone at the time. I'm not quite sure. I think it was probably a big fat Nokia. So I know that was hard to miss, but if at the time, if that's what it took for the cancer to be treated, I just felt lucky. So it wasn't a very negative experience. The discomfort was there. But again, it was the best it could be, and removed the plaque and, had a cool patch and went back home.
So since then, you had brachytherapy, you made it through plaque week, mm-hmm. hell week, whatever we want to call it. Mm-hmm. You made it through that. And then from that point, just based on like the size of your tumor, I'm going to assume you started having just monitoring scans. Did you have baseline scans done at the beginning?
So they immediately, I had everything every 3 months initially. I went to Mayo Clinic. I switched from when the doctor in Tampa said, we think it's cancer, it's bad cancer. We got a little scared, too young for that. And we got a second opinion at Mayo. They said it could be bad, really bad, or nothing. And I had a feeling one day, just to get that feeling, something's not right. And I called them, and they happened to have a cancellation, and that's when it went in, and they said, oh, it's grown. And actually I had an opportunity to go to Will's Eye Hospital, and that's when they said, yeah, I think there are actually two in there. And so we then did the treatment. So every 3 months I had CAT scans, MRIs, blood work, seeing the eye doctor frequently. My vision right after radiation was actually 20/20. It was spectacular. But it was about maybe a year later when I was like, something's not right. And I went back down to Tampa, and I had more tumors. So I had to have a second treatment. I had to have, I don't know if they still do, but it was called TTT, which was thermal treatment therapy. And I did that down at USF, and that was strong laser, which immediately, you did it outpatient actually, which was called character building. That was a very painful, a marathon of an experience. And immediately my peripheral vision was gone after that. But for a few years, I was with all the doctors every 3 to 4 months, and then I got to every 6 months. But with my eye doctor, once the second treatment occurred, I started having some complications from the radiation, for years. I was seeing him almost once a month for a while, for the hemorrhaging from the new blood vessels that had tried to kind of bring oxygen back to the dead area of the eye. So it wasn't, for a few years, there wasn't a set schedule with my ophthalmologist because I saw him all the time. All the time. It felt like I drove down to Tampa from St. Augustine at least once a month. Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay, so let me get this right. You had the single ocular melanoma tumor that was treated in the beginning, and then a year or so later, it grew back, or there was like another section of it. Did they identify if it was two separate tumors in the same eye? That's like insane. I've never heard of that.
Yes. It was, so after the radiation, it looked like we're good to go. And I had all of the follow-ups, all of the, you know, all of the millions of appointments that you have once you have, you know, officially cancer. And, I just had this feeling. I didn't have a visual change or anything. And, I had some great doctors at Mayo, but my ophthalmologist I felt was a little bit of, so I spoke to some of my friends that were in the medical field and I expressed to them some of my hesitation, and they said, we've been waiting to hear this. They kind of just knew it had been going on for a while, I guess, my reticence. And, so I went down to Tampa and he said, you have another tumor. And I think it might've been bigger than the last one. He said, I want to do something right away. And I don't know if it's within days. I can't remember. I went into the, you know, the hospital and, had the TTT. So was, you know,
goodness.
Yeah.
That's like absolutely mind blowing to me. I'm like, I mean, it just speaks volumes to the fact that you're even still standing today. Like just with having a recurrence like of that nature, that's insane. And definitely a very rare thing for anyone listening. Like, don't panic. It's exceptionally rare to have something like that happen. So as you've, you know, as you've dealt with this diagnosis, you've navigated obviously a lot in really in the first couple of years, you know, from your early 20s to really before you even turned 30, you had navigated a significant amount with this cancer diagnosis and the risk and the kind of the fear of the unknown that comes with that we all deal with. Yeah. So what do you feel like has helped you navigate having a cancer diagnosis and just all of these, you know, ups and downs?
I think initially being so young, there's a little bit of denial again and immortality. When it set in, I think the support system, that's one of the things that I don't know if I mentioned, the volume of people that came out of the woodwork that either I hadn't seen in a while or, you know, in interactions with people that were just blew me away. And it actually lifted me from, you know, a place I'd been struggling with prior to even being diagnosed. So I think the support, I had a really great relationship with my doctor in Tampa, and from my experiences, I knew he was advocating for me, and that was one of the differences between him and another eye doctor I'd gone to was, I say he diagnosed a bump in my eye, whereas others said, well, this is what a bump in an eye could be. So I had a lot of faith in him and knew that whatever was thrown my way, kind of have to make peace with a few things when the outcome is not necessarily in your control. So it definitely gave me a better perspective on things. So I just had to look around and say my thanks, but also advocate for myself and be as strong as I could be, and have faith in myself as well. So I was very lucky in the journey with the amount of people that were around me that were just fighting hard for me and loving me.
Goodness. Well, I love what you had said, and I'm gonna quote what I put on the Instagram post from what you said in your email to me. You just said, navigating this journey hasn't been with one strategy. To best describe it, the OM journey is like looking for new land. The length of the journey, the weather, the crew, and the tools needed change from day to day. Even the destination isn't a certainty. I loved what you said there. That was so powerful, and I just wanted to make sure that we shared that verbally because not everybody sees the posts.
Yeah.
So as you've gone through your diagnosis and just the journey of having ocular melanoma for the last 20 plus years, and I know you've dealt with vision loss. You've dealt with the recurrence you mentioned. You mentioned your diagnosis itself and the support that you had helping with just navigating depression, which I think is a pretty normal thing to experience in those early 20s, especially coming out of college and high school and everything that is. But what are some of the other things that you noticed that you have had to struggle with or struggle through as a result of your diagnosis?
It's quite a range. It's been so long. It can go anywhere from the anxiety, any doctor's appointment. If there's an anomaly, you really hone in on your doctor's behavior and you go, that was different than last time. Does that mean now there's a bump, there's a lump, there's a, you know, whatever. So there's a little bit of kind of the self-talk to say not everything's cancer. Then there are things of being aware that because somebody has said stage this or it could metastasize, those words become a part of your life and your everyday. So when somebody else is like, oh, I don't feel well, not being indifferent or kind of like, oh, you don't feel well, you know, because you've had this different perspective. And so your assessment of what a bad day is a little bit different than the average. So making sure you're not kind of judging somebody else's experience based on yours, all the way to becoming a mother. Just the being told it would be in my best interest to not have children, because at the time they felt that hormones and tumors, there was, you know, the growth was related. And going past that, having a child, and first thing I wanted to know is what color are his eyes, and getting genetic testing to see if I carried anything that I could pass down. So there isn't a part of life that it doesn't kind of permeate, and it just evolves. That's why I don't always know what's next in the journey. Are we done? Are we coasting now? Or is there going to be a wrench? So that in its of itself is something to manage, the when you can have a tough day or when you have an eye appointment coming up and you've had so many appointments that went poorly. You've had a ton that went great over 20 years, but still there were so many where, okay, now your retina's detached, or now you have more bleeding, you need laser, you need Avastin, you need this. And to make sure that you're not kind of borrowing trouble, which is, for my personality, sometimes a hard thing to do. Any visual change, is something wrong with my right eye, being aware of that. It's all over the place, kind of its impact and all that you consider and how it, you know, shapes who you are and your behavior.
No, that's really well said. So can you tell us, despite all of the difficult things, and like you said, you know, those can, if you weigh them and you count them, they can add up pretty quickly. They can rack up quite a tally. But despite all of that, what are some of the gifts that you've noticed in your life that have come, you know, as a result of the diagnosis that you've been given and how you've been able to navigate this, the people you've had around you?
The first one I can say is, I know I mentioned it in my email, was a repaired relationship with my mom. She and I were very different personalities. I couldn't get out of the house fast enough. And this is actually something that turned us around 180. So that was incredible. But even past that, the friendships that I have, I've had some great friendships, but to see my friends shine and to see them lend me their strength 20 years ago, you know, I still have a lot of the same friends. And I think some of it are just you have best friends, they're soulmates, they're your kindred spirits. And some of it are the experiences that they stood by you while you went through them, and that just makes them these staples, these parts of your heart. And I also, you know, I look left and look right and see my life, and there isn't a day that I'm not grateful that I've been able to have a life. So it's, the blessings have, they continue. And again, I think my mental health, you know, I was struggling and it lifted me up, but also put me in a position to advocate for myself some more as well. So tons of them. It never stops. I mean, even when I get together with a friend that was there and there was a pivotal moment when I was first diagnosed and they were there, that connection and that love and that value of that person, it just hums strongly. And it makes me feel so happy's not the word, grateful's not the word, lucky's not the word, but it, I guess beyond blessed. So many positive
fulfilled
things.
Fulfilled, maybe?
Hmm?
Yeah. No, I just was going to say fulfilled, maybe, or connected.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I don't want to say valued, but especially in your early 20s, you know, when you question who you are and everything about it, that's something that really, you know, came to the table was, I'm worth it. And it's kind of a weird connection to make, but, I just beam because some of these people, many of them, again, are a part of my heart and how I endured. So it's just, kind of like seeing a puppy, you know, that good feeling, when I see my family and friends.
So one of my questions was, who or what has been your greatest support? And I want to amend this question a little bit, just in light of kind of the phase of life that you were diagnosed in. How did you see your support system evolve from the time that you were in your early 20s to then? I know you since, you know, after that point, you eventually, you got married, you had at least one kid. Have you had more than
just one?
Have you had more than one? Mm-hmm. I feel like you have one. Mixing up people in my head. But you've had a family, mm-hmm. and so like I can just imagine that there've been some shifts and some adjusting mm-hmm. that you've had to make to experiencing life while also carrying this diagnosis. So is there anything you want to say kind of speaking to that?
My support system, I've been, again, I think staying in the town that I grew up in, I've been allowed to have the continuity of a lot of the same people in my life. So my family, and again, people that I hadn't seen in a while, you know, coming out of the woodwork initially, but maintaining those relationships. So I've had, you know, and again, the support system has only grown, but it's, I don't think I've been really lucky. I don't think anybody's actually left. But I also don't let people leave my life. Once I love you, you're in. You have a partner or boyfriend or girlfriend, and they can be substantial too. But in all honesty, some of the initial people in my family, my parents, my sister, but my best friends, you know, the people that saw you at your lowest and that are still there, it doesn't take away from the people that you have in your life now, because they are just as valuable and can help you just as much. But having those, the foundation of who you are in this journey are the people that were there in the beginning, and to have them here now is just knowing they're there is support in itself. So I do have more people, and my husband is a part of it too, but I don't know, there aren't words. I've been blown away by the love that came out of this.
Well, thank you for sharing that. If you were to talk to someone else who maybe they're like you, they're early 20s and they're, or really, I mean, it could be anyone, but just someone who this came out of left field and they've been given this diagnosis, what would you say to someone who's brand new to being diagnosed with ocular melanoma?
Hold on. The research has gotten better. The statistics have gotten
it's
better.
Okay.
No, I meant like I would tell them to hold on, like just hold tight. No, pull people close to you, and it's okay to It's okay to need people. I'd say it took me a little bit to get used to asking for help or saying, yes, I'd like you with me for this. But also I'm a big person about advocating for yourself. If it's your mental health, it definitely, if it's a doctor and you're not, I don't know, get a second opinion. Fight your insurance. I went head to head time and time again, and this was before Obamacare and all of that. So, you can't, unfortunately, you need more than just the strength to get through the actual, you know, diagnosis and the treatment. There's so many other aspects involved, because also in your early 20s, technically you're an adult. So there's so much you have to do for yourself, because you can't say mom, dad, guardian, you know, here's the bill, or here's what the doctor said. But ask if you need help, but also make sure that you're doing what's best for you. There are times where I would do a lot by myself, more for self-preservation. My personality, if somebody's with me, I'm gonna worry about them and how the experience is affecting them, and it's kind of letting some of my emotional energy out that I needed to handle what the doctor was gonna say, or the needle, or the treatment, or the loss of vision. So you really just, you know, advocate for yourself in a lot of fashions and forms, and that's up to and including getting past your ego, because people do want to help, and that love that they want to give you is something that you probably need, and it's okay for you to have. So you don't always have to be tough, and just getting through it. And then one thing a person said to me once when my vision, you know, left and, you know, things were harder, she said, it's okay to grieve something you've lost. Because I'd say, well, it wasn't bad. I was so lucky it didn't spread. I was so lucky I still have my other eye. And as much as you say that to, it's true, but it doesn't take away from what you're going through or what you've gone through. And it's okay to acknowledge that and to say it was hard, or to say it's still hard, or it might still upset you, and let yourself process that. And then pick yourself up.
I feel like that's such a powerful way to put it. So Erin, thank you for sharing that. So is there anything that you do now, that you do now, kind of more of as a, I guess we'll call you a seasoned OMI, anything you do, you know, as you approach doctor's appointments, checkups, anything like that, that you do differently than you used to when you were initially diagnosed?
I think I'm more comfortable asking a few more questions. For me, I was very lucky to have the same doctor for about 18 years. So I drove to Tampa for a Dr. Pavin, and he was worth it. I called him my blankie. And when he retired, I was kind of this aimless person, because he's who told me I was okay. And I'm still in touch with him some. So that being said, you know, when I switched to a new doctor, just asking and kind of saying what's best for myself, as far as, no, please don't dilate my good eye with the stronger stuff, because it'll, you know, be big for 2 days. Some of the small things. But also when a doctor says, well, you know, would you like this or like this? Well, what do you think is best? But also, if I want to have an appointment at 6 months instead of 9 months, and the doctor is kind of like, well, we could do this or that, maybe 6 months, because again, for my entire adult life, that's how I've known I was okay, was an eye doctor saying, or an oncologist saying, here's your clean bill of health. And if that's what I need to walk out of that office and exhale for the next 5.5 months until I realize my next appointment's up and then get anxious again, then that's what I need. And if there's like an advice against it, of course, listen, but, again, I think it's the self-advocacy, and just, you can, you know, do your research and politely speak up. So, you know, being younger, I listened. Unfortunately, I had a doctor that was 100% in my corner. But so now it's the same.
Love it. So one of the things that I asked you was like, what's a defining belief or like a mantra, like something you've said to yourself kind of over and over again, that, you know, just something that just comes to mind whenever you've dealt with these appointments, these uncertainties. And the words that you used were, I can handle this. So do you want to maybe like explain, how has that phrase, like saying that to yourself, helped you like throughout the last 20 years?
I think it's sort of a way to, some of the stuff I would just break down and say, okay, it's just this appointment I have to get through. I can handle a day. I can handle, if I've had to break things down to 5 minutes at a time, I can handle it. To the deeper moments where if this MRI comes out poorly, okay, what are the options if this happens, A, B, and C? And thinking it through and coming to terms with it. So thus far, I would say also it becomes more of a mantra because I have handled it this far. And, you know, you have to look at, you know, what you are doing when somebody hands you that diagnosis, and you still, you kept breathing and you got up and you spoke and you handled it. And so I just, it's easier, you know, once you do it so much, but you just have to tell yourself. I mean, what are you going to tell yourself? You can't. So, you know, I say to my son all the time, we'll figure this out. We'll figure it out. But I've had, 20 years to think all this through, and I can handle this has been my consistent mantra. And some of it is telling myself that to convince myself. But as time goes on, it's I can. Put it in front of me. I can handle this. I think only one time was I was like, ooh, I don't know about this one. You know, when some other test, some diagnostic tests might have indicated like a whole nother experience, that worked out fine. But and it's okay to curl up and cry too, but you're handling it that way as well. But just, I can handle it.
I love the self-validation that comes with that statement. Like there's a lot mm-hmm. to that statement, both in acknowledging the what you're currently doing, however you're coping, mm-hmm. is handling it, and also the confidence that that phrase can bring to an uncertain situation of like kind of reflecting back on the idea that, okay, I handled A, B, C, D, and E. I call it looking for my proof, like looking for that proof of what I have done in the past, what I've already overcome, cancer related or not, as reason that, okay, well, I did that. So it's like, it's kind of like the whole, I ran 5 miles. So exactly. Why not six? Mm-hmm. Like that, I mean, that kind of a, mm-hmm. a kind of thing. And I know you're a runner as well. So have you found like that fitness and just exercise has helped just keep your mental state in a healthy place?
Yeah. I mean, my probably not PC joke is if I didn't run, the population would be smaller, because it definitely keeps me, you know, more level. I've always been a very physical person. And that was one of the hard moments, when I had a detached retina and then some other things, I couldn't exercise for 9 months. I could walk. I think I was 25 or 26. Well, who walks at 25 and 26? I mean, you're running to the bar. You're running to see your friends. You know, I was training for a marathon. So that was, I think I was my most dangerous and grumpy at that time. But it definitely keeps me, it's the, more of it is not just the physical exercise, but the camaraderie with the people that I run with. And it is also the accomplishments. You know, I'm not fast, but I'm not going to stop. So kind of building on that and having, you know, as an adult, especially as a parent, you're so focused on your child. And so your accomplishments, you're like, I did the laundry, you know, that's an accomplishment, but it's nice to have running or something like that in your life where you're like, I did go do this trail run, or I'm going to give myself this trail run to try and to push through and to give myself that time to do that. So it's definitely a part of who I am. You know, as swimming has been in a few other things that have defined who I am. But yeah, it helps me not just with ocular melanoma. It's the world needs me to run. It's in everybody's best interest for me to exercise. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm so glad that you came out to the run, the ocular melanoma, looking for a cure in Orlando that we had earlier this year. That was super neat to see you there. And also, like, I mean, you ran better than I did. So yeah. Great.
That was
great job.
Incredible to be there.
But I mean, I understand. Yeah. So yeah. And that's, I guess, before we wrap up, I did want to ask you, what kinds of support groups were you able to find initially, with your diagnosis being so far, in advance of, I mean, I don't know, MySpace maybe?
Yeah,
like, I don't know what existed then. I didn't really get on social media.
I don't think social media was really there. I remember I was a lifeguard on the beach for a long time, and I was working with somebody a few years younger than me, and she mentioned Facebook. I'm like, what's that? So there really weren't any. I mean, I went online and I did research on young adult cancer, which initially was like, you know, it was at the time the demographic that had the least amount of improvement because there was so much focus on pediatric and you have so many adults, you know, the breast cancer and testicular, and there was just kind of this, you know, neglect for this the odd duck out. So I found a couple websites that I don't know if they even had a blog, but one of them was F Cancer. And so some of the humor helped. So there really, really wasn't, and especially specific to, you know, eye cancer. I remember getting rolled in for some surgery, and one of the surgeons or somebody said, "Oh, you're young for this." And I'm like, "Well, yay." Yeah. You know, so I mean, when I'd go to my appointments,
like, thank you for stating the obvious.
There's all gray haired people everywhere. So I, you know, my friends were really reliant, but that's or I was really reliant on my friends and family, but that's what made the 5K. I felt like a kid in a candy store there because I had never met anybody else that had had ocular melanoma. I had met a few other people in my 20s that maybe had had leukemia when they were younger, you know, a few other cancers, but not that I want anyone to be in our club, but it was so incredible to me to speak with you and the other women there that were survivors and to laugh at some of the same things and to just immediately know so much. That was, again, I mean, I might as well have been at Disney World or Harry Potter World, just to be able to connect with somebody and hear your experience. So there really wasn't one 21, 22. The internet wasn't as big. It wasn't. But yeah. That's okay. So
that's true.
But that's when, you know, again, I'm ever grateful. You know, if I turned left or right, again, there was usually somebody saying, "You okay?" You know, so that was huge. But there is, I do encourage everybody going through almost anything. Is there a support group? Are there other people that are going through what you're going through? Because the value of that is immeasurable. Like I said, just, you know, my husband stood back at the race and I almost felt bad, but I was just so giddy to be around you ladies, you other survivors, because it was just my people. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what you were saying. It's one thing to meet another cancer survivor, right? Like someone who has gone through cancer in general, because there are some universal experiences, some universal feelings that you go through when you have a cancer diagnosis, regardless of what it is. But there is something to be said of finding the people, finding the community, and being in person with them, whether it's at a 5K, because we have these 5Ks all across the country this year and last year, or to come to, you know, just a local get together with maybe five or so patients who happen to just maybe drive in from a few hours to get together for lunch. Like we do that in Arizona. And so like, if you are lacking that community, you can find it. Like that's part of the benefit of the internet. That's part of the benefit of our patient advocacy group here at Acure Insight is that we can help you connect with people who are local to your area or who are at least closer than maybe across the world or across the country. And like you said, the value of meeting those people, like it's almost hard to describe it until you experience it yourself. Until you actually get together with someone else in person. Like you can't really fully appreciate the value of connecting with those people in person until you do it.
Yeah.
So I love that you were able to come and meet with us, and it was such a pleasure to meet you. And it was, I mean, I was duly giddy because it was very fun to meet someone 20 years out. Like that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it was, it's definitely meeting somebody that's gone through your experiences a little bit like somebody or the world telling you you're okay. Just because, you know, if you're talking about an ultrasound or you can talk about a few things, it's just kind of, you know, sometimes you can be in a room and you feel alone because of what you're going through. So just for somebody else that knows exactly some of it, you know, like it's okay that you're upset or yeah, no, that ultrasound was garbage. No, that hurt, you know, or, you know, I understand your fear. There's just, there's a lot of comfort in somebody really knowing what you've been through. Even if they don't have to say anything, just you know that they have and them standing next to you has huge, huge positive impact. So yeah, it was fantastic. I was so excited to go. Thank you for putting it together. Thank you for everybody involved for putting it together. I want to wear my shirt all the time.
Yep, that is a plus. The shirt, the medal, the people, they all add up. Well, as we close, Erin, I don't want to take up the rest of your day. I'm sure we could talk for ages just about so many different things. But as we close, I had asked you if you have a favorite book or a favorite song, any of those kinds of things that just help to uplift you and bring comfort. So what would you say that is for you?
Harry Potter. It wasn't around when I first was diagnosed. So I don't know. When I was first diagnosed, I think the beach and the sand, which I know not everybody has access to, but for a book, any kind of struggle I'm having, be it anxiety over a doctor's appointment or a tough mental health day, or, you know, you just need to step away from your world. I always say a book is the safest place to be. And it's if you're fighting dementors or if you just had a bad diagnosis, I jump into any one of those books and I'm okay for as long as I'm in there. And it's just a nice reprieve. And it's just, you know, it fills my heart.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna tell anyone that I picked you for this interview because we both love Harry Potter, but like that might have been a factor.
Yeah.
Might have been a factor. I thrived off of just chatting with you and hearing your excitement and some of the things that helped you, the Harry Potter quotes, the stories, the ideas of finding dementors, like all of it. Like, I mean, we speak the same language. We absolutely do. So Erin, this has been such a pleasure. It's been so fun to talk and to hear your story and to give you an opportunity to share this across the internet. And as we get the recording and everything up, I hope that we'll be able to share this far and wide just to spread the message that there is hope in ocular melanoma, despite recurrence, despite a bizarre, you know, crazy situation when you were diagnosed at the time that you were.
Thank you.
So thank you for being with us today. And guys, we will see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the I Believe podcast, brought to you by Castle Biosciences. Please be sure to subscribe, and if you're so inclined, send this episode over to friends, family, and share on your social media to help spread awareness around OM. If you have a moment, leave us a brief review or consider making a donation to the links in the show notes to keep our podcast going. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at A Cure in Sight. We'll see you next time on the I Believe podcast.